Osho, the rebellious spirit, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 17.
Beloved Bhagwan, would you please talk about playfulness? Because there is a beautiful small boy within me whom I have neglected for a long time. This small boy is playful, curious, and ecstatic, but most of the time I do not allow him to lose control. Please comment.
Ananda Gogo. Playfulness is one of the most repressed part of human beings. All the societies and cultures, civilizations have been against playfulness. Because the playful person is never serious, and unless a person is serious, he cannot be dominated, he cannot be made ambitious, he cannot be made desirous of power, money, prestige. The child never dies in anyone. It is not that the child dies when you grow. The child remains. Everything that you have been is still within you and will remain within you until your very last breath. But the society is always afraid of non-serious people. Non-serious people will not be ready to go after money, after ambition, after politics. They would rather like to enjoy existence. But enjoying existence cannot bring you prestige, cannot make you powerful, cannot fulfill your ego. And the whole world of man has been going around the idea of the ego. Playfulness is against your ego. You can try it and see. Just play with children and you will find your ego is disappearing. You will find that you have become again a child. So it is not only true about you, it is true about everyone. Because your child has been repressed, you will repress your children. Nobody allows their children to dance and to sing and to shout and to jump. For trivial things, that perhaps something may be broken, perhaps they may get their clothes wet in the rain if they run out. For these small things, a great spiritual quality, playfulness, is completely destroyed. The obedient child is praised by the parents, by the teachers, by everybody. And the playful child is condemned. His playfulness may be absolutely harmless, but he is condemned because there is potentially a danger of rebellion. If the child goes on growing with full freedom about playfulness, he will turn out to be a rebel. He will not be easy to be enslaved. He will not be easy to put into the armies to destroy people or to be destroyed himself. The rebellious child will turn out into a rebellious youth. Then you cannot force marriage. Then you cannot force a particular job. Then the unfulfilled desires and longings of the parents cannot be forced on the child that he should fulfill them. The rebellious youth will go its own way. He will live his life according to his own innermost desires, not according to somebody else's ideals. The rebel is basically natural. The obedient child is almost dead. Hence the parents are very happy. Because he is always in control. Man is strangely sick. He wants to control people and he wants himself to be controlled too. Because in being controlled, you are no more responsible. And in controlling people, your ego is fulfilled. You are somebody special. Because of all these reasons, playfulness is from the very beginning stifled, crippled, crushed. You are asking, there is a beautiful small boy within me whom I have neglected for a long time. This small boy is playful, curious and ecstatic, but most of the time I do not allow him to lose control. What is the fear? The fear is conditioned by others. Always remain in control. Always remain disciplined. Always respect those who are elder than you. Always follow the priest, the parents, the teachers. They know what is right for you. Your nature is never allowed to have its say. Slowly, slowly, you carry a dead child within yourself. This dead child within you destroys your sense of humor. You cannot laugh with your total heart. You cannot play. You cannot enjoy small things of life. You become so serious that your life, rather than expanding, starts shrinking. I have always thought why Christianity has become the world's greatest religion. And again I have found it that it is the cross and the crucified Jesus so sad, so serious. Naturally, you cannot expect Jesus smiling on the cross. And millions of people have found a similarity between themselves and Jesus on the cross. The seriousness, the sadness has been the cause of Christianity spreading than any other religion. I would like that our churches and our temples and our mosques, our synagogues become non-serious, more playful, full of laughter and joy. That will bring to humanity a most healthful, wholesome, integrated soul. But you are here at least being my sannyasin. You need not carry your cross on your shoulder. Drop the cross. I teach you to dance, to sing, to play. Life should be each moment a precious creativity. What you create does not matter. It may be just sand castles on the seashore. But whatever you do should come out of your playfulness and joy. Your child should never be allowed to die. Nourish it. And don't be afraid that it will go out of control. Where it can go? And even if it goes out of control, so what? What can you do out of control? You can dance like a madman, you can laugh like a madman, you can jump and jog like a madman. People may think you are mad. That is their problem. If you are enjoying it, if your life is feeling nourished by it, then it does not matter, even if it becomes the problem of the whole world. In my college days, I used to go for a morning walk very early, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and just by my house side was a small street with bamboo groves, very dark. And that was the best place because it was very rare to meet somebody on that. Just one watchman of a rich man's house used to see me. But one day, this is what perhaps you may call going out of control. I was jogging on the street and an idea came to me that it will be good if I jog backwards. And anyway, there is nobody in the street. So I started jogging backwards. And in India, the idea is that ghosts walk backwards. I had completely forgotten the idea. I was so much enjoying it. It was such a cool morning. And a milkman happened to see me. He has come a little earlier. He has never met me. He has come a little earlier from small villages. People used to bring milk. So carrying his buckets of milk, he saw me suddenly, because I was under the shadows of the bamboos when he must have come close where the shadow ended, and there was a small patch of moonlight. I came suddenly out of the shadow, jogging backwards. He shouted, "My God," dropped his both the buckets and ran away. Still, I did not remember that he is afraid of me. I thought he is afraid of something. So I took his both buckets, although the milk was gone, but I thought at least I should give him his buckets. So I ran after him. Seeing me coming, I have never seen anybody run so fast. He could have been a champion in any world race. I was very much surprised. I was shouting, "Wait," and he will look back and without saying anything. just the whole scene was being seen by the gatekeeper of the rich man. He told me, "You will kill him." I said, "I am simply going to return his buckets." He said, "You leave the buckets with me. When the sun rises, he will come. But don't do such a thing. Sometimes you make me afraid too. But because I know for years I have been seeing you doing all kinds of strange things on this street, but sometimes I become afraid. I think, who knows whether you are really a ghost is coming backwards towards me. Sometimes I close the gate and go inside. I keep my gun always loaded because of you." I said, "You should understand one thing, that if I am a ghost, your gun will be useless. You cannot kill a ghost by a bullet. So don't ever use it, because a ghost will not be affected by it. But if a real man is there, you may be caught as a murderer." He said, "That's true. That I never thought about, that ghosts just in front of me." He took out all the bullets. He said, "Sometimes fear is so much, I may shoot some man and may kill him." I said, "You just look at me. Be first certain whether I am a real man or a ghost. You are taking your bullets out, and it may be just a ghost who is persuading you." He said, "What?" And he started putting his bullets back. I said, "You keep these two buckets." I remained almost 6 months in that part of the city. Every day I asked that watchman, "Has that man come?" He said, "He has not come. Those two buckets are waiting for him, and I think now he will never come. Either he is gone forever, or he has become so afraid of this place that he never comes on this street. I have been watching. And when my duties change and the other watchman comes, I have made him acquainted also that if somebody comes, and we keep these buckets in front of the gate, so he will recognize that his buckets are here." But 6 months have passed, there is no sign. I said, "This is a very strange thing." He said, "There is nothing strange. You would have killed anybody coming out of darkness suddenly. Why you were going backwards? Jogging, I know many people do, but doing it backwards, I said, I have been doing jogging and I became bored doing just always forward. Just for a change, I was trying backward. I was never aware that just today that idiot has to come. Nobody ever comes on this street. And that man must have spread the rumor and rumors go like wildfire. Even the landlord in whose house I used to live heard about it, that on this street, he told me that you stop going that early for morning walk. You go only when sun has risen. Because one man has seen a ghost I said, who told you? He said, my wife has told me. And he said, the whole neighborhood knows that after 8 o'clock in the evening, the street becomes empty. I told him, you may not believe it. There was no ghost. In fact, it was I who was jumping backwards. He said, don't befool me. I said, you can come with me. 3 o'clock in the morning, there is nobody. He said, why should I take any risk? But one thing is certain, if you don't stop going, then you will have to leave my house. You cannot live here. I said, this is very strange. Even if the street is full of ghosts, why should you insist that I should leave your house? You cannot force me. I pay the rent. You give me the receipt. And in the court you cannot say that it is because this man goes on a street where ghosts jog. This cause I don't think any court is going to accept. He said, do you mean you will drive me to the court? If you insist too much, you can live in this house, I will sell this house, I will leave this house. But I said, I am not a ghost. He said, that I know. But mixing with ghosts, someday some ghost may come following you in the house. And I am a man with wife and children. I don't want to take any risk. Here you don't be afraid. You can jog backwards. Even you are a real ghost, nobody is going to take any notice of you. If you cannot allow your playfulness here, then in the whole world, you will not be able to allow it. Allow it totally, let it go out of control. And once your child is very alive and dancing within you, it will change your very flavor of life. It will give you a sense of humor. A beautiful laughter. And it will destroy all your headiness. It will make you a man of the heart. The man who lives in his head does not live at all. Only the man who lives in his heart and sings songs which are not understandable by the head, dances which are not in any way relevant to any context outside you, just out of your abundance, out of your affluence, you have so much energy that you would like to dance and sing and shout. Do it. It will make you more alive. It will give you a chance to taste what life is all about. The serious man is dead before his death, long before his death. He remains almost like a corpse. Life is such a valuable opportunity. It should not be lost into seriousness. Keep seriousness for the grave. Collect seriousness lying in the grave waiting for the last judgment day. Be serious. But before the grave, don't become a corpse. I am reminded of Confucius, one of his disciples, asked him a very general question which is being asked by thousands of people, that will you say something to me, what happens after death? Confucius said, all these things about death and after death, you can contemplate in your grave. Right now, live. There is a time to live and there is a time to die. Don't mix them. Otherwise, you will miss both. Right now, live totally and intensely. And when you die, then die totally. Don't die partially. That one eye dies and one eye keeps looking around. One hand dies, another hand goes on searching for truth. Then die totally. And contemplate what death is. But right now, don't waste time about contemplating things which are far away. Live this moment. The child knows to live intensely and totally and without any fear that he will go out of control. In this temple, you are allowed to be yourself without any inhibitions. I would like this to happen all over the world. This is only the beginning. Here you start living moment to moment totally and intensely and joyfully and playfully. And you will see nothing goes out of control. That your intelligence becomes more sharp. That you become younger. That your love becomes deeper. And then you will be going into the world, and wherever you go, spread life, playfulness, joy, as far away as possible to every nook and corner of the earth. If the whole world starts laughing and enjoying and playing, there will be a great revolution. War is created by serious people. Murder is committed by serious people. Suicide is committed by serious people. Madhouses are full of serious people. Just watch what harm seriousness has been doing to human beings. And you will jump out of your seriousness. And you will allow your child, which is waiting within you, to play and to sing and to dance. My whole religion consists of playfulness, this existence is our home, these trees and these stars are our brothers and sisters, these oceans and rivers and mountains are our friends, in this immensely friendly universe, you are sitting like a stone Buddha. I don't preach the stone Buddha. I want you to be a dancing Buddha. The followers of Buddha will not like it, but I do not care about anybody. I simply care about truth. If a truth does not know how to dance, it is crippled. If a Buddha is not capable of laughter, something is missing. If a Buddha cannot mix with children and play with them, he has come close to Buddhahood, but he has not been yet totally awakened. Something is asleep. In Japan, they have nine pictures those pictures are tremendously significant. It is a series. In the first picture, a man has lost his bull. He is looking all around. There are trees and thick forest and no sign of the bull. In the second, he finds the footprints of the bull. In the third, it appears that the bull is hiding behind the trees. Just the back side of the bull is visible. In the fourth, he has reached near the bull and you see the whole bull. In the fifth, he has caught the bull by the horns. In the sixth picture, he has been struggling with the bull. In the seventh, he has conquered the bull. He is sitting on the bull. In the eighth, they are moving towards the home back. In the ninth, the bull is in his stall. And the man is playing on his flute. These nine pictures are missing one picture, because these nine pictures came from China, and the Chinese pack of pictures has 10 pictures. When they were brought into Japan, the tenth was dropped because it looked very outrageous. And the tenth is my Buddha. In the tenth picture, the bull is in the stall and the Buddha is going with a bottle of wine towards the marketplace. The Japanese mind thought that this will be too much. What people will think of a Buddha with a wine? This is outrageous to ordinary religious mind. But to me it is the most important picture out of those whole series. Without it, the series is incomplete. When one has achieved Buddhahood, then one should become just an ordinary human being. Going to the marketplace with a bottle of wine is symbolic. It simply means now there is no need to sit in meditation. Meditation is already always in the heart. Now there is no need to be serious. One has found what one wanted to find. Now it is time to rejoice. That bottle of wine is a symbol of rejoicing. Now it is time to celebrate. And where you can celebrate except in the marketplace? For meditation you can go into the forest, in the mountains, but for celebration you will have to go to the marketplace, where you are going to find a disco. Remember the tenth picture always. Don't stop at the ninth. The ninth is beautiful but incomplete. One step more. Just playing the flute is not enough. Get drunk. And dance madly. And Gogo, you have such a beautiful name that whatever you do will be suitable with Gogo.
Beloved Bhagwan, my first meeting with you 13.5 years ago at Woodlands ended with my getting up from sitting at your feet and walking not out of the door but into your closet. It has been an uphill battle ever since. Bhagwan, what's happening?
Rama Prem, it is not only with you, it has happened with many people. Because in the woodlands where I used to live, the door to my room and the door to my closet were exactly the same. And for anybody who entered for the first time, it was natural there were 50-50 chances. So almost 50% people used to enter into the closet. And I enjoyed it very much. I used to have an electric locket with buttons by my side for both the doors. Once a person used to enter into my closet, I will close the lock. Perhaps you are still inside the closet. That's why you are saying it has been an uphill task, a battle ever since. You have not been out yet. And I don't live anymore in the woodlands. It was a real fun because people will get out of the closet so embarrassed. So upset. The closet was big enough, so they went round inside the closet. And so many robes, so they will go around the robes, and finally they will come out. Shocked very much that what happened, because they had entered from the same door, that was their idea. Then they became aware coming out that there was another door just by the side, exactly the same, painted the same color. There was also a third door which led to my bathroom. And once in a while, it has not happened to you, Ramaprin, that somebody will come out of hurry from the closet door. And as the mind is, it goes to the extreme, he will leave the middle one and go to the third door, which will take him into the bathroom. And those who enter the bathroom will take a longer time to come out. Because my bathroom opened into another door. That was my sonar bath. So coming out of all those doors, they will feel so embarrassed that they will ask what happened to the door from which we had come in. And I will say, remember always the golden mean, the middle one. And not only about these doors, in your life also never go to the extremes. Always find the middle one, the golden mean. On the extremes, it is always half truth. Only in the middle, it is full, it is whole. But now there is no problem. You think since then your life has been an uphill battle ever since. We make our life. We are the creators of our life. It all depends on you. If you are trying to achieve something far away, if you are trying to achieve something which is not natural, then life becomes an uphill task. But if you are not trying to achieve anything unnatural, then life becomes a let go. Then you start flowing with the stream of life downwards. Lao Tzu has called it the water course way. And I think that is the right concept for anyone who wants to live a relaxed, silent, peaceful, and joyous existence. Never try to go against the current. You cannot win. The nature is too big. You are too small. You will simply get tired. And the more you will be tired, the more life will look gloomy, dark, meaningless. Just let the river take you wherever it is going. A man who has a goal to reach is bound to remain in anguish and anxiety. My approach is the river of life itself is going towards the ocean. You just float with it. Wherever it takes, is your home. And while you are floating with the river, you can enjoy the sun, the trees on the bank, the birds and their song, and the stars in the night, and the moon. All the whole existence is available to you, because your whole energy is open, is not engaged, is free. Ramaprem, just follow the water course way. Be relaxed and allow the life to take you wherever it is going. Don't be bothered that it should reach some specific goal. It has no specific goal. Just go dancing with the river, singing with the river. You have made it a battlefield, fighting with the river, and then you are in trouble. You will never win, and you will never be able to enjoy a single moment, because every particle of your energy has to be put into fighting. Don't fight life. But all the religions have been teaching you to fight life, to be anti-life. And they have created a poor humanity which has forgotten to laugh, forgotten to dance, forgotten to sing. Knows only one thing, to fight. Stop fighting. Every river reaches to the ocean, and without any map, without any guidebook, and without any guru, it is in the very nature of the river that it goes on following because it is not going upward. There is no struggle. It is going downward. So wherever it finds a more lower land, it moves towards that path. And the ocean is at the lowest point. So no river can miss the ocean. Ocean is your goal. Ocean is the God. If you allow yourself to be taken by life without fight, you will reach God. Nothing can be a hindrance or a barrier to you. So if you feel that it has become a battle, except you, nobody else is responsible. And it is in your hands to change your direction within a moment. Don't fight. And to be defeated by life is not a defeat. It is our life. To be defeated by it is our victory. The moment you start understanding this strange statement that to be defeated by life is our victory, you have found the very secret of all success, of all blessings.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other day I heard you speaking about the jump we all will have to take from the known to the unknowable. Originally, what I wanted to ask you was, what is holding my legs and keeping my wings from unfolding to really jump and fly? But this morning, when you left Chontazu, at the door you turned towards me and something happened between you and me which went beyond mind and heart. I felt my body moving in a way it could never do deliberately. For seconds, everything stopped. I had no control of anything. It was like a delicious, fearless dying. For a long time afterwards, I felt drunk, weak, and strong at the same time. I don't know what really happened. Did I jump too short? Didn't I jump at all? The only certainty I have now is that I cannot jump. Beloved Master, please comment.
Prinda. I am aware that something had happened to you. It was a jump and it was not sharp. But it was a jump of consciousness. That's why you are puzzled. And when consciousness jumps, body goes in strange postures, which even if you want deliberately to do, you cannot. The jump of the consciousness was not deliberate. Here, whatsoever happens is never deliberate. Anything deliberate is going to be very small. It is going to be smaller than you. Anything that happens without any deliberation on your part, you are just a watcher and it happens. You are just as if just standing by the side, only an observer, not a doer. Then something greater than you is happening. You felt later on weak and strong both. That must have puzzled you and will puzzle others. But it is an absolutely certain consequence, because something happened beyond your control. Your ego was not in control, hence the weakness. Your ego feels threatened that you have come too close where the ego can simply fall apart. And at the same time you felt strong. Your consciousness felt strong. Because for the first time, for a few moments, it was not controlled by the ego. For the first time, for a few moments, it had wings of its own. It was not in the chains and the bondage of the ego. So your soul felt the strength and your ego felt weak. It is a good sign. The beginning of the death of the ego, the beginning of the end of the ego, and the beginning of your entry into the world of consciousness. But later on, your ego must have taken its own possession, its own domination over consciousness. And then you have been writing, "The only certainty I have now is that I cannot jump." That is not your certainty. That is ego which has taken its power again in its own hands. For a moment the consciousness has slipped out. You need not deliberately try to jump. That will not happen, because who will deliberately try? It will be your ego. You don't have any approach to your consciousness yet. It was just as I turned back and looked at you, you forgot completely about your ego and jumped. Forgetting one's ego is the only jump that can bring you back to yourself. But never try deliberately. just as it happened this morning, on its own, allow it to happen. Do not make any effort. Just when it happens, just be totally with it. Don't hinder it. And don't feel weak. The weakness is not yours. The weakness is of the ego, the false self that is pretending to be your real soul. Your real soul has felt for the first time strong. Give it more chances. And slowly, slowly, it will become capable to come out of the bondage on its own. The ego cannot keep it. It is just a kind of hypnotic condition. Because from the very childhood, your ego has been supported by everybody. All nourishment has been given to the ego. And your soul has been starving. Mostly you have forgotten all about your soul. Being here with me, it is going to happen more and more. That it has happened once, now the possibility will be more and more. Suddenly it will happen. First in my presence and then even without my presence. Sitting silently in your room, and you will find a tremendous strength arising in you, and at the same time something is dying, something that is not you, something that has been always pretending to be yourself. The pretender has to die, the false has to disappear, so that the real can take its place. And once the real is in its own place, your whole life becomes authentic. Each act takes tremendous beauty and grace. Each word comes out from the very deepest part of your being, full of fragrance, fragrance that you cannot find anywhere in the world. Once a Sufi mystic came to see me. One of my friends has made a beautiful marble hall for me to conduct meditation classes, and also for my library. It was surrounded by a beautiful garden. The whole day it was empty. Only in the evening people used to come to meditate. The Sufi had come in the afternoon and he wanted to see the meditation hall. I took him there. I was puzzled. For the first time I have seen anybody doing that kind of thing. He went around the hall snuffing like a police dog, smelling this corner, that corner. And that hall was pure marble, nothing else. There was not anything in the hall. I have always liked empty places. I was standing there looking at him, an old man, and he sniffed all around and he was very joyous, and he said to me that whatever has been happening here is good because I can smell the same smell which arises in me when I am in meditation. He gave me the first idea that meditation can be smelled. Perhaps for Sufis it is easier, because for centuries they have been using perfume, certain perfumes which are in some way similar, a far away echo of the inner fragrance. They are the only people in the world who have worked for hundreds of years in search in the outside world of a similar kind of smell. That day I started thinking, perhaps if somebody starts searching for taste, meditation may give you a new taste, because there are scriptures which say that the meditators start having a sweet taste in their mouth. Perhaps all the five senses may have something to say about meditation. Eyes have always been known that they not only express your meditativeness, the energy that jumps from one person to another person jumps from the eyes to the other person's eyes. Eyes are the most sensitive part in your body. Naturally, they are capable of catching the subtlest vibration of light, of depth, of profundity, of love. You all know that when you are in love, your eyes are not the same. When a lover looks at his beloved, it is not the same eyes, although they are the same eyes, but something inside those eyes changes. Some new energy starts flowing through those eyes. Meditation is a far greater phenomenon than love. Premda, you jumped well, but don't try deliberately to do it because you will fail. You just be grateful that it happened and wait with silent longing, not expecting, but just available. If it happens, you will be tremendously grateful. Don't demand it, because these are so delicate things that expectations, demands can destroy them. You simply wait with a longing heart, and it will happen again and again, and it will start happening without me. I'm just an excuse. And then slowly, it need not happen. The ego disappears. Your soul is settled in its right place. It has been displaced by the society by a false substitute. The false must die for the truth, for the real to assert itself. That false was feeling weak, and the truth within you felt strong. Nourish that strength and let that weak part of you starve and let it die. The death of the ego is the birth of God within you. It is your real birth. From that birth, a totally different life, a life of celebration starts. Okay, Bhima?
Yes, Bhagwan.